Please silence all electronic devices.
I'm sorry, folks. I don't trust them. And our folks don't trust them.
There is a great deal of overreaction from those who are criticizing this legislation. They will see me in court. You know, if the General Assembly were really trying to do a power grab, there's a lot of things the General Assembly could do, and we weren't.
And they don't have a very good track record there.
Any further discussion or debate?
From the tornado shelter at the North Carolina General Assembly in downtown Raleigh, this is the WUNC Politics Podcast. Glad to have you along. It is Thursday, June 7th, 2018, a hectic week here on Jones Street. Here to discuss some of the happenings and debate and colorful sound bites that we heard this week is WUNC political reporter Rusty Jacobs. Hey, Rusty, how are you?
Very well, Jeff. Thanks.
We had an assortment of issues. We'll touch on a farm bill, the Farm Act of 2018, voter ID dropped this week, anticipated to some extent. There were other measures and moments throughout this week. But let's start with the budget veto. And then as we talk here on a Thursday, and it's going to hold through the weekend, we have had an override, at least half of an override through the Senate. What struck you, if anything, about the governor's veto? We knew it was going to happen, or we really expected it was going to happen. But as he took to the podium on Wednesday, very much felt political. There were all those educators in red behind him. I won't steal any more of the possible narratives. But what struck you about the veto message, just how it played out this week?
Not a lot of suspense.
No.
Everybody knew what was coming. This is the political theater we've been witnessing since Cooper took office. I mean, this is not even the first budget that he vetoed.
Right.
But what's different or what's special or noteworthy about this is he is clearly using the budget and the differences between his proposals and the GOP-controlled legislature's proposals to draw battle lines for November.
Right.
I mean, the midterm elections, you know what he's not running, but you know what people in his party are going to be running on, that the GOP will sacrifice higher teacher salary increases, sacrifice more spending on environmental quality protection, sacrifice all those key issues for tax cuts for the corporations and for the highest earners, right? $200,000 plus. That's what he's saying. He's saying, let's freeze those cuts, and I'll give you everything that you expect as a voter. But of course, at an inopportune time for him, the Fiscal Research Division, nonpartisan agency within the General Assembly, says, you know, we think your proposed spending plan, Governor Cooper, would actually create a deficit within a couple of years, something that Senator Berger seized on in urging his colleagues to vote for the override.
Right. So that budget deficit, I think it was an estimated 467 or 469.
Berger liked to say million. Half a billion.
Half a billion, right. I mean, but that's fair, right? It's close to half a billion. It's interesting because the table has kind of transitioned 180 degrees from the criticism that the executive branch was levying on the legislature for its budget a year ago about how there was a whole in the second year. So there's that. And then the other part of it was yesterday at this press conference, he, Cooper, got three questions from us, the Associated Press, one from myself, and one from WRAL and Laura Leslie, former WUNC reporter, all about, Governor, what is your plan to deal with a half a billion dollar hole? Are you going to raise taxes? Are you going to cut services that are already existing? And he didn't even pretend to dance around our question. He didn't even acknowledge our question. He went in a completely different direction. So the Republicans have pounced on that for sure. And I think the Republicans also, I mean, just to go to something you were saying a moment ago, the Republicans have also pounced on, oh, you're a Democrat from a swing district, from a suburban area. Do you support 6.5% average pay increases for teachers? No, you don't. Do you support 8% raises for state correctional officers or state highway patrol troopers? No, you don't. And we've already started to see some of those political advertisements emerging on social media. So this budget is going to be very political for the next 5 months, at least in certain places in the state.
And the legislature, the leadership in the legislature, the GOP can even say, hey, we responded to Red for Red. We responded to the teacher rally. It was 6.2% average increase. Right. It's now 6.5%.
And they ticked it up a little.
That's right. They ticked it up a little. They're not talking about not increasing at all, but the Democrats have fine-tuned their argument. I mean, you heard that refrain over and over again during budget debate, that saying, this is not enough, that the budget goes only so far, but it hasn't gone far enough. Representative Morey from Durham, they all, one after the other, got up and basically ended with that same refrain.
he, the governor, focused the criticism, at least from my vantage point, largely toward public education when he announced his veto on Wednesday. The only other thing I guess I would note is just a big picture number, and this really to me points to a difference in philosophy. The Republican budget, which will go into effect by the end of the month, barring, I don't know, a natural disaster. They will override it in the House next week. It has growth of like 3.25% maybe. The governor's budget proposed, you know, his largely symbolic budget proposal, set forth to grow spending between 6.5% and 7%. So I'm not weighing in on either this is better, that's better, here's the middle line, you should have met there. But that's a fundamental difference right there. I mean, the House and the Senate agree on how much money to spend, and the governor he's at I think it's like $600 million different place. So that's where some of this is born out of. Any other takeaways from the budget?
Cooper's got almost nothing to lose.
Sure.
By proposing something more ambitious, because A, it's not going to be adopted.
Right.
So he's not going to have to really suffer any consequences. He gets to say, hey, this is what this is about. You either vote for giving people even higher salary increases. You vote for not giving tax breaks to the richest people and the corporations in favor of all these important public interest issues, or you go with the GOP. But he doesn't have to suffer the fiscal consequences.
Sure. And I did ask him this week if, and I think I steered it toward the living wage that is going to be implemented, at least that's what the legislature has told us, is in this budget, I mean, that we've seen within this budget, for full-time permanent state employees to like $31,200 a year. And I asked the governor about, you know, is that a starting point? Is this, you know, is there an opportunity here to say this is a building block or whatever the case may be? And he pivoted back, as he did it several times during his press conference, to that wouldn't have been in there if it weren't for my proposal. And you know, he is elevating his budget to say, without this document, without what he had called for, some of these things might not be going into law. And I those are his words. I mean, it's fair to note that, particularly because 2 years ago we had a Republican governor, I don't know what I'm trying to say. I was going to say that the budget proposal then was an afterthought from the governor. It's still an afterthought, but it's a different afterthought. If that makes sense. I mean, what the governor's putting forth is fundamentally different than it was with Pat McCrory.
Right.
So,
yeah.
Anyway, there you go. All right. Budget veto took place. Override will conclude next week. And we're also keeping an eye on the Farm Act, the 2018 Farm Act. And listeners may remember that last year, lawmakers implemented a bill that capped compensatory damages for property owners living near farms that are a nuisance. And I guess we can't swear on the podcast, so we'll just call it poop. Poop that sprayed, the smell of crap, among other issues among other operations that happen at hog farms. That was last year. This year...
And I should point out, it's not even a hog farm. It's only forestry operations. Could be, you know, you've heard of the wood pellets. I mean, there's all kinds of agricultural...
Wood pellets don't poop, but right...
But they create a nuisance for
neighboring
property
Absolutely. Owners. Absolutely. We're talking about water contamination as well, potentially. So the bill this year, I think, goes in a little bit of a different direction. Not think, it does. It removes a provision of current law that would classify a farm as a nuisance if it has been negligent or improper in its operation. So ostensibly, if I'm a property owner and you're a farmer, I can't go after you anymore if I can't consider you a nuisance, right? I mean, you are a lawyer, but you're a former practicing attorney.
Never did civil law. I would never hold myself up as anything other than a former prosecutor. I could handle lots of criminal statutes, but I know some of the issues at play.
What was one of the things that was interesting this week as the debate carried out, and I think we started to see some fracture amongst Republicans, at the very least, among a retired Republican in Skip Stam, who's a former House rep from Wake County, who spoke. He's no longer here at the legislature serving, but he did for, I want to say, 20 years. He spoke at a Senate committee meeting, basically talking about how this is a violation of liberty and property rights and goes against decades of established tort protections. Did I say that right, Counselor?
Yeah.
Okay. But Republicans aren't in agreement on this.
And he's probably not a huge fan of plaintiff's attorneys, I'm guessing. I mean, just sure. Because of his political affiliation, political loyalties.
Yeah.
But what's interesting is it seems to almost get at the heart of, or it seems that the legislation within the provisions within the Farm Bill seem to almost try to relieve companies like Smithfield.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, pork producers and other big operators of hog farms, relieve them of the obligation of relying on like what they call the best available technology.
Yeah.
Or I should say, relieve them of the need to search for ever improving technology. Because right now, advocates or environmental advocates and people who are supporting the rights of property owners living near these industrial scale hog farms say, you know, there are other states with lots of hog operations that are using technology that does reduce the amount of or the nuisance and reduce the environmental effects of these operations. Why aren't they doing that here? Now, apparently, technology that can be applied in the Midwest does not necessarily apply in the East or in the Southeast. Nonetheless, there are, in the energy production industry, for example, plants, natural gas fired power plants are supposed to always be employing the best available technology that reduces and suppresses, reduces the number or controls the amount of NOx emissions, nitrous oxide, all the things that could affect public health and create the nuisances we're talking about. So I wonder here if this is beyond the legislation that was passed last year that just goes at what you can actually get out of one of these nuisance lawsuits.
Sure.
It almost de-incentivizes, reduces the incentive for going after these people because you're not going to get much back. But this is actually saying...
This fundamentally says you can't.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. Because if the company's using the technology that's available, it's not a nuisance.
Right.
But there is a, I believe, in a sense, there is a public expectation that industries will always be looking for the best available, should always be looking for the technology that will minimize the impact, the industrial impact on society. Does that make sense?
Sure.
So I wonder to what extent this bill will relieve industry of needing to constantly look for the
and
best available technology.
Having to spend more. That's certainly part of it. Is it fair to call the 2018 Farm Act the anti-Fred Rogers bill?
Because
I mean, you're not being good to thy neighbor.
A good citizen.
Yeah.
I'm sure there is someone out there who would like to adopt that as a label.
What else? What else is going on? Rusty Jacobs, WNC political reporter, is here. We're recapping the week. It was a busy week here at the North Carolina General Assembly on Thursday, which is today, earlier this afternoon. A voter ID proposed constitutional amendment came forth, and I will read it because I'm holding it. It says the question to be used in the voting systems and ballots shall be either voting for or against constitutional amendment to require voters to provide photo identification before voting, close quote. I guess the context I would set this up with is there are 32 states that require some form of photo identification. This body has not put forth what one would constitute or refer to as a clean voter ID measure. There was the, I'm going to use the word loaded, the loaded
election law. Are we talking about the surgical precision?
So, and this always gets me, and we're going to do this live on a podcast, which is dangerous. Is the surgical precision the voter ID, or was that redistricting ruling? We'll have to go back and check. I just can't remember off the top of my head as we're sitting here kind of flying
through
things.
I thought it was voter ID, the 2013, but
House Bill 589. I didn't mean to talk you out of it, but either way, House Bill 589 was a measure that originally included voter ID. It came right after the Supreme Court struck down Section 5 of the Voting Rights Act. But aside from voter ID, it also included the reduction of the elimination of same-day registration, the reduction of early voting, the elimination of out-of-precinct balloting, and pre-registration for 16 and 17-year-olds. And the only reason I still remember that is
because
I think you're right, by the way.
Surgical precision is redistricting.
There have been a lot of court decisions. Sometimes it's hard to keep track of all these things, right?
Whether it is from redistricting, which I think you're right about, or not, what it shows is the Republican leadership in the legislature is nothing if not persistent.
Mm-hmm.
They want to do something about voter ID. And there's a lot of reasons why they're re-energizing their efforts
sure.
to get a law, or in this case, a constitutional right. amendment in place. We're going to come back to November.
Right.
I mean, they're concerned about any kind of any blue wave of any height.
Sure.
And
a blue ripple.
They want to motivate voters, and they want to put an issue that's going to bring voters out to the polls. Interestingly, I wonder to what extent it's going to backfire. Because there are a lot of Democrats
right.
and there are a lot of advocacy groups out there who will be fired up even more by this effort. So is it going to get the Republican voters out right. that the Republicans want, or is it going to get even more of Democrat and maybe even unaffiliated voters out to say, no, no, no,
right.
I don't approve of this. You know, it's all how is this issue going to be couched?
Right. Messaging becomes paramount here. And, well, you know, one of the best or worst parts of our jobs, depending on, I guess, your perspective, is the spin zone, which we enter frequently. And people will tell us, this is how this is going to play out. This is the effect. This is the purpose. And, you know, that's just a fact. Of course, it's not actually a fact. I have heard from people on the right and the left. People on the right have said to me, hey, voter ID plays well with virtually every demographic. You name the demographic, and there is not a majority, but a strong, if not overwhelming majority, that supports voter ID. And they are confident that this is going to pass overwhelmingly or really comfortably. But to your point, the question that I've wondered, and I've posed this to some on the right, has been, hey, what about African-American voters? Because you think about 2010 and 2014, the last two midterms we've had. There were statewide races on the ballot here in North Carolina then, but statewide, notwithstanding, midterms, generally lower turnout. African-American turnout was down in 10 and in 14 here in North Carolina. And that, of course, was with a black president. So could this
Who wasn't running in those years.
Correct. Who wasn't running. Could this awake, a sleeping giant? Could this mobilize more African-American voters to the polls? And, of course, this is an issue of if it's an issue of polling and there's data, I haven't seen it. But the folks on the left have said this very well could backfire. You need to be careful. And the folks on the right have said we're not worried about it. At least that's what they've said to me privately. So I mean,
the ACLU is already out
yeah.
with their statement saying that this is a continued assault mm-hmm. on voting rights and an effort to get, I think, that what they call the most vulnerable voters, to keep them from getting to the polls. Read black voters and other
right.
minority voters
right.
who aren't going to have the means to get whatever state identification is authorized. Because really, it says photo ID. It doesn't have to be a driver's license, apparently. You could get some state issued. Probably has some language in there.
So right. I wanted to only wrap up what I was saying before. I mean, I think you and I both know it, and a lot of people listening probably know it. But in the event that they don't, we started to mention that bill from 5 years ago. That was ultimately struck down by the Fourth Circuit Court of Appeal, and that was upheld by the U.S. Supreme Court because it the House bill that passed 5 years ago, the elections bill, disproportionately affected African-American and Latino voters. So that's where, I mean, you mentioned the ACLU statement from today. That's where a lot of this comes, cyclical is not the right word, but where it's coming from again. I mean, there's a history here in this state, right? In terms of the details of what kind of photo ID will be required to use if the voters pass this, we don't know. That's not in here. That'll be worked out later. And of course, that could be a point of contention. That could be an issue that voting rights activists will say, this is suppressing the vote. We don't know at this point how this would be implemented. So yes, wonder about those big picture things. And I also wonder a little bit about how this measure is going to mobilize voters in suburban areas, right? Like that's something we spent a lot of time talking about, reading about, reporting on in 2016. And that in many ways is at the heart of the supermajority here in the House. They have to retain whatever it is, 74 R's, and some of the most vulnerable ones are in suburban areas. So how does this play with suburban voters? Will it actually mobilize people? I mean, how?
Right. It could be framed as a very sensible amendment that just merely says, look, we want to protect
right.
the integrity of the vote in North Carolina. Voter ID with a photo. And if you don't have a photo, you get to vote absentee. Right. So it's not even, on the other hand, you could see how it could be framed
yes.
as just a way of keeping, again, the people who are most likely to vote for Democrats away from the polls.
Two quick notes before we move on. Missouri posed this question to voters in 2016. It passed, I'm not looking at the numbers, but roughly by a 2-to-1 margin. They supported it there. And there was a Gallup poll in 2016 asking Americans whether or not they support photo ID at the polls. And it was like a 4-to-1 margin. It was about 80% who do support it, at least according to that poll.
Who's going to say they don't support integrity
right.
of the vote?
Sure. And as an offshoot, I do wonder, as this heads to the messaging stage and the rhetoric battle, how the Russia investigation and how tampering, to whatever extent it did happen with elections in this country, will become part of the narrative in terms of, hey, you know, our election in 2016 might have had some cracks in it, and this is a way we can shore that up. I mean, I think you're going to hear some
Republicans will actually seize on the Russian meddling as something to promote their message.
Stay tuned. Rusty Jacobs here on the podcast. Before we get you out of here, let's do some of the random and esoteric, as we often do here on the WNC Politics Pod. Busy week like this, heading home on a Thursday. You're not working tomorrow. Spoiler alert for those listening. What's the first drink you're reaching for when you get home, before or after the kids go to bed?
I have had a slew of IPAs lately.
Okay.
Real good. Oscar Blues.
Yeah.
And they have a number of them. Voodoo Ranger, I think it's called. Really
yep.
good.
Yep. That's a good one as well. New Belgium.
Always,
yeah.
You know, I've come around to IPAs.
Okay.
I was off them for a while, but now I'm kind of into them when they've got that kind of biting, almost citrusy quality. I'm into those.
Were you on, then off, and now back on? Or were you just off and now you've finally arrived?
I just got off. I just fell off that. You want to say fell off that wagon, but I got off that ride, and now I'm back on.
Favorite? I can't believe I'm asking this. New York Yankee. Growing up, you're a Yankee fan, right?
Oh yeah.
I'm a Red Sox fan, for the record. And the Red Sox, actually, I don't know if you remember, in 2004 they were down to the Yankees 0-3 in the LCS, and they came back to win. It was the greatest comeback ever.
Are you kidding me? Do I remember that?
I know you do. Yeah. Favorite Yankee growing up.
That's really hard. Okay. I mean, I was around for the, 77-78. But no, I would have to say, here's my guy, Jorge Posada.
Wow. Okay.
Switch hitting catcher.
Georgie.
Right? Not the best.
No.
But boy, his attitude was great. And he was consistent. I loved watching his stance at the plate, whether it was left or right side. He was just always in the right squat. The squat never changed. Bat height never changed. And he's consistent. And oh, you know what? I'm sorry. I got another player from Puerto Rico, Bernie Williams. Great guitar player.
I
love guitar.
Guitar player.
And I also, another guy, and the Red Sox almost got him. I'll never forget the suspense. You know, he was in talks with the Red Sox.
Bernie, or are we going to A-Rod?
Bernie Williams.
I don't remember that.
Yes, he was in talks with the Red Sox. And there was this, I remember the reporting from WFAN, the New York sports station that I always listened to. It was like a late night call. And I think it was between him and George Steinbrenner.
Interesting.
Saying, I don't want to go anywhere. Just like, and you can imagine Bernie with his doe eyes, saying, I don't want to go. And he, next day, $51 million contract or something like that. But he stayed in New York.
He stayed in New York. Okay.
Stayed in New York. Okay. Yeah. No, he was on the, apparently poised to leave.
Right.
But he stayed.
That rings a bell. Okay.
And I just feel he's one of these guys who I think he's got the New York Yankees record for the most postseason RBIs or home runs. He played more.
Yeah.
They played more games, and there were more rounds than Mantle and the rest of them. Nonetheless, it's important. It said something about him, and I think he's very, very underappreciated. He was never considered a great center fielder.
Nah, but
all-around player, unbelievable.
He was a great Yankee.
Yeah,
I would reiterate.
So
that.
Those two,
though, and obviously Jimmy was a headliner. I had nothing but respect for Posada there for a long time, and my quick Bernie Williams story. And I believe it was 99 when the Red Sox similarly were down. They were facing an 0-2 deficit against the Cleveland Tribe, the Cleveland Indians. They came back. They won in five. Pedro had this incredible performance. He came in and he pitched. It was like 6 2/3 of no-hit baseball. So the Red Sox moved on to face the Yankees in the ALCS. The Red Sox, of course, at this point still haven't won a title in, quick
since
math, 70,
right?
71 years. Yeah. And I think I believe it was game one of that series, Red Sox Yankees, ALCS 99. And we'll check this afterward, and somebody will tweet at me, you're an idiot if I'm wrong. But Bernie Williams hit a walk-off home run in like the 11th inning or the 12th inning or something. And I was 99. I was in high school. I was a freshman in high school, and I was a sophomore in high school because it was the fall. I was furious. I was so angry at Bernie Williams. I'd stayed up late. I don't remember if there was a rain delay or just like a dozen pitching changes. I was ticked at Bernie Williams, but he was never a guy as a Red Sox fan you wanted to see come up late in the game. My favorite Red Sox player is probably Pedro. Going to see Pedro pitch was one of the – it was
the man who beat up Don Zimmer. Oh, man, come yeah. on.
Chuck Don Zimmer face-spiked him into the ground. Pedro was so neat to see pitch, and it's the only time I've ever experienced this in baseball. I probably saw him pitch three or four times at Fenway Park. You did not – you normally go get a hot dog, a beer, restroom, whatever, when your team is in the field. That is not the case, was not the case when Pedro was pitching. There wasn't a soul who moved when Pedro was there. And you had, Dominican flags just rocking throughout the outfield. Yeah. And it was always a count. Like, everybody in the place knew how many Ks does Pedro have right now. It was always like, will he get to 10 by the fifth inning? Does he have a shot at 17 tonight?
Do you know what the most he ever had in a game? It's for the Red Sox.
For the Red Sox, I believe it was 18. Again, somebody can check this and holler at me on Twitter. I believe it was 18. Might have been that 99, his 99 season when the Red Sox hosted the All-Star game, and he was just magnificent. He won the Cy Young that year. I think it was late September. It was like a rainy night in the Bronx, and they beat New York like 2-1 or something, and Pedro had like a complete game shutout, or maybe it wasn't a shutout, but a complete game. And I swear it was like 17 or 18.
I believe that. I think so, Ron Guidry pitched 18 strikeouts. One other thing, Manny Ramirez?
I love Manny. Manny being Manny. Manny's a goober. Like, Manny is just the ultimate goober.
He played at a high school in Manhattan played a football Washington game Heights? In. That's right. George Washington.
Whoa, hang on.
When I was at McBurney, I was in a little private school in closer to Midtown Manhattan, and we had a football game. It was the last game of my senior year.
And you played against Manny Ramirez?
No. But at his school.
At his school.
Yeah.
Interesting.
That's my only claim to be coming that close to a baseball superstar.
I see Manny being a little too aloof. To play football, like he just wouldn't be paying attention. He'd get knocked on his rear. Have you been to New Yankee Stadium?
I have, only outside it.
Okay.
Yeah, and never have not yet been to a game there. But I was in New York, actually visiting the Bronx DA's office when I finished law school. That was one of the places I was thinking of applying to.
Dun, dun. I need to drop in the Law and Order theme here. Last question, just because I'm curious, may very well cut this. Rangers or Islanders? I mean, you mentioned late 70s. Were you an Islanders guy? Because they won three straight Cups,
yeah.
Right?
Oh, yeah. Oh, no,
or
four.
83-83 or whatever.
And I lived in Long Island at the time.
Okay, right. That's Islanders territory.
And I even played Little League hockey for a short while.
So you were an Islanders fan.
I was an Islanders
fan. Okay. Yeah. I don't have any other random questions to pose to you here. Those were two decent ones. You got any random ones for me?
Oh, let's see.
I don't usually do
this. What's the first sports-related present you're going to get your son?
Ooh, the first sports-related present. That's interesting. I mean,
Or have you already? Maybe you already got him some clothing. A onesie with the Red Sox.
So truthfully,
logo.
I haven't. We have one of my. The first was probably a buddy of mine gave us these little shoes that have the Patriots emblem on them. Now, before everyone just stops the podcast because I realize the Patriots are universally hated, I would just note that my mother gave us some onesies, Celtics onesie, a Syracuse. I went to school at Syracuse onesie. I have not purchased anything yet. That's a good question.
How about not apparel?
Yeah.
How about equipment?
Got to be a baseball glove, right? I mean, if not a baseball glove, I learned to swim pretty early. I love the water. Like, I'd love for my son to learn how to swim. So, like, maybe a swim trunk. But that's not really I guess that's apparel.
Yeah.
And we'll see how he does with crowds. But perhaps my wife's a Carolina grad, and we have Carolina tickets. So perhaps he'll be in the house for some Tar Heel basketball games, come next fall. Your son, your daughter, athletes, sports? Do they care?
Yeah, no, they care. They David's just made the swim team
nice.
In our neighborhood. Ilyana just started gymnastics / dance class, but she's taken soccer. She's done the soccer shots program at her. Cool. Preschool. David's been on soccer teams. David has. They both like the T-ball, a little plastic T-ball set I got them. And David is actually, I'm actually pitching, still wiffle balls.
Yeah.
But I'm actually pitching to him. And he is, I don't think he's going to get drafted out of high school. I don't know that he's going to get drafted out of college. But he enjoys swinging. He actually, I think he's got.
But not off the French windows of the kitchen yet. He's not like, he's not breaking anything.
He's hit it into the neighbor's, the side of the house a few times, but it hasn't broken anything.
We'll take note. We'll save chatter for the Major League Baseball draft that occurred this week for next time, or not. Rusty, thanks for coming on. We'll be continuing to track all of the many things that come through this building next week. Thank you for tuning into the WUNC Politics Podcast. It is available pretty much every week on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, wherever it is that you get that on-demand listening throughout the week. Of course, stay up to date with whatever is happening with North Carolina politics at our website, WUNC.org. For Rusty, I'm Jeff. Enjoy your weekend. We'll talk to you next week.
Start spreading the news. I'm leaving today. I want to be a part of it. New York, New York. These vagabond shoes are